And he's here. And I'm excited that he's here. And I hope that he'll come up as soon as he finishes whatever he's eaten there at the table, because he's got some music that I think is worth setting this thing aside for. I might read a couple paragraphs of this while he's getting up here, but I don't want to do more than a couple of paragraphs. This was a keynote address by a man named W.I. Thompson at the First International Symposium, Expo 74, World's Fair, Spokane, Washington. That World's Fair, I'm told, was in general an environmental sham, a subtle ruse. But this particular speech was an exception to that, I think. The guy starts off this way: "Most of what you will hear today, I have a feeling, will express the concerns of an advanced industrial society. I feel that international post-industrial civilization is now in its decline, and that emerging is the quite radically different planetary culture that is exploring the new dimensions of human consciousness that contain the very things we need for our survival. So I'd rather shift out of the concerns of industry versus ecology, the establishment versus the revolutionary left, and take a really broad historical point of view of transformation. Time has speeded up so much that I think we really have to look at it from that point of view. We sometimes forget that when we look around us at society and look at, quote, real things, end quote, we're looking at the past. When you look up at the sky and you see the stars, you're not seeing the stars as they are now, you're looking at the past. So when you look at the landscape at Spokane or at the office buildings in Manhattan, you are seeing the past of an advanced industrial nation-state system, but it's already changing. The way of discussing the implications of the present is to talk about the future. If you had flown into England in 1790 in a flying saucer and talked to people and said, 'Hey man, I hear you're having an industrial revolution here,' 99% of the people would have said, 'No, that's not happening.' And then you would point to one brick factory in London and you'd say, 'Well, what about that?' And people would all say, 'So what's one brick factory? What does that mean?' Everything would be pretty much farms and nice Georgian buildings. What Blake could see in 1790, the rest of his English countrymen saw in 1851. What we are now experiencing in 1970, I think, will become reality for us at the end of the decade or into the 80s. I think the whole sense of time has to be seen from an overview. In order to jump to that overview, I'd like to step back for a minute and consider what the historical foundation of post-industrial society is all about." I'm going to stop there and do more of that next week, because it keeps going in a very interesting vein, but I don't want to miss the opportunity to give you a taste of Greg Schindel, who doesn't get into the city all that often. He spends most of his time in the North Country, in a certain sense. So we have Dale Pollisar with us in from Marin County, too. And we'll do the trip acoustically, so if someone's near that switch back there, we can turn the gear off and just take it from here.
Well, if you can drop in a note anywhere. Well, I'll hold the tone somewhere.
I'll start warming it up. If you could bring it up at all,
flash your mind.
and rubies on the grass. Country morning, country morning, country morning, country day. Country morning, country morning, country morning, country day. Such a fine day, such a fine day. Such a fine day, such a fine day, such a fine day. Such a fine day, such a fine day, such a fine day, such a fine day. Blades of grass hides the serpent, serpent. Dark shadows need blades of grass hides the serpent and his child. You got to catch him in the open, catch him in the open, catch him in the open. You remember gentle fire of your hand, your hand. You remember the gentle fire of your hand. Be his friend. You got to catch him in the open, catch him in the open, catch him in the open.
Yeah. You got to get a little fun. Let the end of the fun. Get a little fun.
You will Your drinking cup is filled, home behind. This is the great American wish tune, this next tune. It's called Sweepstakes Ticket. Out the door, once more. Now I'm sitting all alone. Take my rag, I wipe the shag, brush the paper from the floor. Sweepstakes ticket, you're so clean. Won't you help me make the scene? Sweepstakes ticket, you're so clean. Won't you help me make the scene? I know a woman, she's so fine, and I wish that she was mine. Sweepstakes ticket, you're so clean. Won't you help me make you see? Sweepstakes ticket, you're so clean. Help me make the scene. Take it,
thank Ponderosa Pine and Dale Pulsar on clarinet.
I'll do something like if I ever get back to the purple one. Do a couple more. called Yesterday's Rock is Today's Pebble. Seems to be a lot of love around, like everybody loves everybody else, but I haven't talked to too many people that were in love, you know? I guess that's the couple thing. Most of the people I know that fall in love, well, I hear them 6 months later and they tell me, and the guy tells me his old lady's on the rag, you know, and she seems to be on the rag all the time, you know? It could be just a particular species, you know, but... I guess the best thing to do is that if you fall in love and you want to spend your life with somebody, is go, you know, plant potatoes. Yesterday's rock is today's pebble. The quarry's closing down. It's running out of ground. I have walked my pace double. Now I'm troubled, and there's dust everywhere. Hear it calling, it's the voice of sirens. Your choice, my friends. Do you hear it too, or have you seen the high pyramid? I fear a deep. Hope I'm not alone. Oh, I'll climb and I'll stumble and I'll fall and I'll rise. I'll take hold something solid. I hear it calling me away. It's an old man crying, 'cause he finally sees the empty bottle between his knees, and he says, no, I just started broken hearted. He's free. Oh, I'll climb and I'll stumble and I'll fall and I'll rise. I'll take hold of something solid. I hear it calling. I'll be away. It's a love that's lasting, to be so sure. A child who's pure can't stay that way, because it grows up strong, not having any, oh, not a penny to a name. It's a pilot's sky, a sailor's ocean, a monk's meditation, life's celebration, spiritual music. I and eternal motion, and the lover's notion completes the game. Oh, oh, I'll climb and I'll stumble and I'll fall and I'll rise. I'll take hold something solid. I hear it calling. I be with. I hear it calling. Me with. Hear it calling. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, Jim's gonna do a few songs here. A ripe old man, but his glands were out of practice. So Delilah gives him the Gillette one day, and that's how he loses his apparatus. Everything. Then what do they do? Well, they tie him to a stake at the top of the stairs, and they burn out his eyes in a fire. But Samson's got something to say. And he says, my end, I didn't come over splitting hairs, it was a judgment fell from on high. And the reason that I lost mine, very simple. You see, I never got it on, never did I ever seem to get it on. What did I do? Well, I woke up in the morning living through another day, but I never seemed to get it on. Diddly did dum. Oh, gods, Pharaoh God's children in Egypt land. Moses comes and lets the children go. What's he do next? Well, he climbs up the mountaintop to face his man. The children start to rock and rolling down below. And when he gets back down, the children laugh at him. His anger rose, he broke the cap, so it blew it. What happened? Well, a big old rain cloud breaks on Moses. He never stopped to think who might have flew it. Who might have threw it? Who might have blew it? Because he never got it on. Never did Moses ever get it on. Well, he would wake up in the morning, live another day. Try morning, afternoon, and night, but Moses never got it on. Diddle the dee dum, diddle up, diddle the dee dee dee, da 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 da, diddle da 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 da. Well, I stayed up late, woke up very early this morning, came without a warning in bed. I built a door full of swords to keep away the pills in my head. What did I buy? I bought a bowl and a sash and a stash of hash. I kept in my claws in my closet. And then I pass every day trying very hard to pray. It's a bridge, but I never seem to cross it. I never ever seem to get it on. Never have I ever seemed to get it on. Well, I would wake up in the morning. I live another day. But me, I never have ever seemed to get it on. Diddle-dee-dum. Diddle-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dum. Diddle-dee-dum. Diddle-dee-dum. Me, I never got it on. Never do I seem to get it on. Well, you can wake up in the morning living every day, but you may, if you're not lucky, ever seem to get it on. Never got it on. Never ever got it on. Well, I wouldn't wake up in the morning living through another day, but I never seem to get it on. All right. La 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 up and down the pillowcase, fat fell down. He broke his face. Skinny said she did not care. Skinny didn't wear underwear. And that is where Fat found his face. La 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 la. Where is my home? 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 Lately I would peek in the mud for my supper. High in the sky, people who died for my supper. That is my home. That is my home. That is my home. That is my home. Fishes and kings, people who sing for my supper. There is my home. There is my home. That is my home. That is my home. Thank you. la 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 la.
light on the wall of the saucy, threading the sand to the sky. Ducks flying south through the eye of the fish, the great blue heron flies. Yeah, I did.
Good, good.
That was a song that I wrote about 5 years ago, and then I sold a mandolin, which I learned it on, and then I just got this new instrument so I can play it again. And I changed some words because I live now on the Pacific Ocean, and then I lived on the Atlantic Ocean. And the laughing gull has changed to the great blue heron, because that's what I see a lot. And they're pretty good too. Welcome to join in. The ocean breaks against the rock. Listen close, the ocean talks. Shooting water up into spray. Making spray the livelong day. Spray tells me be a merry man, dance, do the best you can, and you'll be the king of the ball. The frog chants all around the pond, making music all night long. Winding sound around my feet. Dancing revolution to the beat. Beat tells me be a merry man, dance, do the best you can, and you'll be the king of the ball. The fish is born and learns to swim. The hook, the line, so strange to him. Out of water, fish learn to die. A trap
thing many learned fly tell me, be a merry man, dance do the best you can, and you'll be the king of the ball. Mosquitoes settles on my arm. Never meaning any harm. Full of my blood, mosquitoes on the ground. Makes a very quiet buzzing sound. Sound tell me, be a merry man, dance to the best you can, and you'll be the king of the ball. They tell me, be a merry man, best you can, and you'll be the king of the ball.
One more.
They tell me, be a merry, merry man, do the best you can, and you'll be the king of the ball.
Without any further ado, I'd like to hand it over to Mr. Pine here, who's going to be doing something called Earth Readout. I think that Pine can probably explain that better than I can.
My name is Ponderosa Pine, and this is Blackbird with me tonight, and we've been working on a problem together for quite some time, I think about a year. The problem is that what we call the ecology movement, quote-unquote, is totally out of steam. A lot of people don't understand that yet, including Tom Hayden, who's running for Senate in the Democratic ticket. He thinks the ecology movement is burgeoning, which I find to be an attitude of alarming naivete. There's nothing going on in the quote-unquote ecology movement except last year's ideas, because they can't get funding for this year's ideas because the foundations and corporations are too frightened to fund this year's ideas. So we've been trying to figure out how to move this year's ideas, and it's a tricky thing, let me tell you, because it's difficult to relate verbally along environmental lines with people, because they've heard so much gloom and doom rhetoric from 1969 to 1974. So one thing we've been trying to do is to combine some kind of environmental expression with music, noticing that for decades Madison Avenue has been combining its words with music and is actually, quote, winning the ball game in the sense of Madison Avenue has been able successfully to raise craving and greed among Homo sapiens, to a point far beyond what can be called human nature, and is thus destroying the physical condition of the planet year by year. So we've been trying to figure out how we might be able to get on some kind of equal terms with them and put music behind our words too, and get past the thin gruel of the lecture or the speech or the poetry reading, etc. So tonight I'm going to try to do a little quiet musical backing for Blackbird as she delivers what we feel is a contemporary form of environmental information. I hope that I prove wrong when I say this, but I don't really expect any more significant innovation from, for example, Friends of the Earth, Sierra Club, San Francisco Ecology Center, or any of the other organizations that have been around. They all seem to me to be spiritually and financially paralyzed. So anyway, here we're trying now some kind of an experiment that we hope maybe we can take on the road, maybe get into college towns like Madison and Ann Arbor, maybe turn on students to some kind of a new energy, get them past the intimidation feeling that I think is a part of the campus trip now into some kind of a new enthusiasm. That's what we hope to be able to stumble through to. So we're in the early experimental stages of this, and so now here's Blackbird.
We've been talking about the idea of biocentennial instead of the idea of bicentennial, because biocentennial has to do with all life, and it has to do with the idea of not celebrating a nation's independence, but celebrating natural interdependence, and it goes over a span of millennia rather than over the kind of short span that U.S. so-called history goes over, which is a very short period of time.
What's going on anyway?
Okay, so what I wanted to talk a little bit about today is the idea of the Earth itself, the idea of the ground out of which things grow, on which we walk, which is really the one of the basic substances of our life here. And some people have come up with some people from, I think probably a lot of you know about Rodale Press. They put out Organic Gardening and Farming magazine, which folks kind of think is a quaint little magazine probably in some places here in the city, and maybe some folks know how really hip it is. Also, Rodale puts out what I think is the best environmental publication going, much better than any of the publications put out by the Sierra Club or Friends of the Earth or any of those corporations, because this is oriented towards action. This isn't just talking about how many plants are on the endangered list or giving you pictures of how few cheetahs there are left in the world. But so it's not, the Rodale's Environment Action Bulletin gives us information that might be and is very truthful, but it also gives us a lot of ideas about who's doing what to change what's going down in industrial culture in the West right now. And there's a lot of people that are working on change. And one of the things that I read lately that I thought was interesting about the Earth itself was an article written by a guy who happens to be a friend of mine who used to work on the East Village Other in the late 60s and is now an editor over at Rodale's Environment Action Bulletin in Emmaus, Pennsylvania. And he's got an article here that talks about what happens when you put, as we have been for the past 50 or 60 years, put chemicals on the earth and put chemicals on the soil, on the crops. And I'd like to read you a little bit of it because it's pretty interesting. It debunks the myth that a lot of people have that this is actually growing better crops, because it's not.
Yeah, okay.
New studies are constantly appearing that bear out the contentions of organic growers that chemicals cause more problems than they solve. David Pimentel and I. N. Oka at Cornell studied how corn treated with increasing amounts of something called 2,4-D, the herbicide, reacted to insect and blight attack. According to their study, the herbicide stimulated pests and increased their numbers as rates of application increased. Corn borer larvae were significantly heavier on treated corn. Female moths raised on treated plants were more fertile, and the larvae survived better in treated plots than untreated ones. Corn leaf aphid populations grew from 30 to 80% larger than on treated corn. The more herbicide used, the more aphid problems. And so forth and so on. Okay. So we're now beginning to get hard answers to the questions, what happens to soil when you use chemical pesticides? And what happens when you use manure and compost? What's the difference? Then the article goes into what's happened to the earth in this country as well as around the world. And one of the things that is good to know is that the situation is changing. People are beginning to become hip to the fact that raising hybrid crops, monocrop agriculture, and using chemicals on growing things is not what we're supposed to be doing while we're growing our food. So now, this is, excuse me. Oh, thank you so much. Oh, yes, I'll cough some other way. This is another article from Rodale that talks about something that's the solution for the problem that I was just talking about. They're talking about something which is a weird title, but a good idea, a national humus management system, which is basically some way of, instead of throwing out everything that we're throwing out, all of our compost and all of our restaurant garbage and all of our other organic waste, of recycling it on a local, state, and national level. Basically, probably is much better to do things on a regional level. Basically, it's much better to do things on a regional level and keep the federal government out of it. Anybody who's an ecologist or just knows what's happening can understand why. But these folks are talking about how nobody's keeping tabs on what's going on with the organic waste. And they say that by getting a national system of taking these things back into the soil, water pollution, here's some things that would happen. Water pollution from city garbage, landfills, and ocean dumps would be eliminated. Now, San Francisco and Berkeley are working on a plan for this. They want to stop dumping stuff into the ocean and start using it on the land. If any of you have dug the San Francisco Community Garden Project, I don't know if any of you have, that's using a lot of compost now, but not nearly as much as the city generates. A lot of it, the majority of it, is still being dumped into the ocean. And a lot of municipalities in the country are now beginning to examine how each person can not throw out all their orange peels with all their tin cans and all their bottles, but put everything back where it came from in some kind of sensible way. So one of the things that would happen is plant nutrients would be returned to the land, and it would lower the price of chemical fertilizer. I don't know what, that's a very auxiliary side effect. The protein content of grains would rise. That's something that nobody's talked about very much, but the fact is that our food has become far less nutritious in the past 50 years. Food grown in this country and in countries that are using chemical fertilizer has grown a lot less nutritious. So if we start putting all of our organic garbage back into the land, we're going to get higher protein in our food, which is something that we need all around the planet right now. One other thing I'd like to say, just on a level of planetary politics, I guess. I heard something from somebody recently that, this is a rumor, this is not something that I know for sure, but I hope it's true, that Cambodia has decided not to use chemical fertilizers on its land. That's a big advance because most of the third world countries are absolutely falling for the chemical fertilizer thing. Like China has gotten Japan, which has got to be the most obvious sucker for American industrialism on the planet today, to be building now 7 large chemical fertilizer factories. As far as I can tell, that's not a very great advance. I mean, there's no sense in moving from capitalism into communism if all you're going to do is repeat the same environmental mistakes that capitalism has perpetrated. So I think it's great that Cambodia is not using chemical fertilizers, because these things, there's no way to separate the political from the environmental. They're really intrinsically connected. They have to be thought out really clearly in order for the world to get on an even keel again. It's not too together to be reading things from the paper. I'd rather just talk straight out, I think. really. I think I'm going to end up with go out of prose and into poetry, because this is something that I wrote a couple of years ago that still seems, most of it anyway, to have something to say about what's going down and what some of the sort of mythological reasons for it are. Because we live in a culture that has been extremely rational and linear and constricted by greed and fear. And I think that what we're seeing now, as far as the earth goes, is a sort of explosion. Sort of an explosion of retaliation from the natural world. I think that we have to pay attention to that. I think that we are beginning to pay attention to it, and the more closely we prepare an awareness in our daily lives, the easier it will be to write it. I believe that things can change instantly, because it's only our concept of time that prevents that from happening. And if we can change our concept of time, that has to do with our awareness, then we can change the world very fast. This poem is called Some Reasons for Going Back Over. Mother Nature, shouted the barbarians as they began to tromp over the face of the earth. We gonna cut you down to size. Stay the chaos of your night with man-made light. And keep a tight rein on you and the animal kingdom, too. Ride you for all you're worth. Eventually, they got it down to a science. Took moon, whale, wolf, tiger, wind for specimens in a museum of Earth. Where did that goddess go whose arms were filled with golden grain? They made her over, filled her breasts with silicone, and from this image tried to draw contentment? Shoo, the milk of human kindness plumb dried up in them days. But then, after what seemed like a long muteness, the mother rose up, and in her rising she was awful, transformed from a petty kitchen scold into the terrible snake-haired deity. She turned men to stone again with her primordial visage. The hormone-injected beef explodes under the guns of the looters who wish to purchase it. It is gone. Oh, the mother is terrible. Her eyes are flashing as she strides through the busy torpor of the cities. Let them eat their color TVs, she shouts madly. Let them eat the fluorescent lights of the supermarkets. Turning to stone everywhere, men in cars named to remind them of a world they drew off from. Impala, Mustang, Cheetah, and everywhere, AstroTurf, disposable plastic cups, old rubber tires. The idea of the world as a series of products swept away by a clean wind and then going back over. Rivers, whirring birds, leaves, remembering how in the beginning they did say that it was Yin, the great mother, who created the phenomenal world. That just has to do something about the earth.